This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Melro 210, a We Hate Movies quarantine sideshow.
Yeah!
Where we ask you to remain indoors, but put on your sunscreen, because we are going back to the West Coast for the last time for Melrose Place here, guys. Oh, it's kind of sad. It's kind of sad.
It is sad.
It is sad. I want to introduce my Satanists in arms here.
That's right. Heard my name.
I've got Eric Siska.
Howdy, partner.
Chris Cabin.
Oh, hi, hi.
And Andrew Jupin.
Yo!
And I am Steven Sadak, of course. So we are going to be talking about the Whole Truth, Season 1, Episode 16, original air date, November the 18th, 1992. We weren't sure. It's interesting because we weren't sure. A little recession talk in this episode.
Yep.
So we're poking at the GWB White House a little bit here.
Don't like that bar.
It's funny that, but they don't really want to deal with like the realities of unemployment either. Like Jane gets like her store goes bust, and they're like, "Oh, what am I gonna do for a job? Oh, I'm offered a job."
instantly, while I'm cleaning out my fucking desk from the last job.
This will be our last Melrose Place episode of the season. We're gonna call it the season because it is gonna come back on Patreon.
Yeah, a date to be determined.
Yes. TBD. But this is the end of Melrose 210, the Melrose Place portion of it today. But we're gonna talk about it first. Yeah. Come on.
Well, before we get into it, Steve, I want people. Let's check the temperature of the room. Have you liked the Melrose 210 experience? Please rate a review on iTunes or wherever you get the show.
Are we Skyping into a room somewhere where people are raising their hands here?
You in the back. Question?
So this episode, I can't even remember. I literally just watched it. I don't remember the exact first scene of the episode. Is it Billy? It's Billy.
Billy's getting dressed to go cruise for babes at Shooters.
He is dressed like fucking Magnum PI, dude.
He really is something. You also, here's a tip. If you're going out like on the prowl, don't go to like your fallback regular joint also. You know what I mean?
But yes, but this proves to be a lie, by the way. That's a scam.
So, that's Billy for you.
Exactly, a huge liar. Allison is like, "Oh yeah, looking good." And I'm like, "Is he?" Because he's actually wearing a suit jacket with a Hawaiian shirt tucked in.
I just don't think CTS can do sarcasm.
I think she's
like, "Looking good."
Cabin, I know that you were just abbreviating Courtney Thorne Smith there, but people in the film exhibition industry, especially in the Northeast, may know of CTS as Cinema Technology Services, the dudes that come and fix your projectors. So I was like, what is he talking about?
Imagine if you called them and then Courtney Thorne Smith showed up. And she's like,
working as the receptionist there.
Yeah, I invented it. Yeah, that's what I did. Melrose.
Acting didn't work out, so I'm fixing projectors.
It's still in the industry.
Tucked in Hawaiian shirt, by the way. Those shirts are not made for tucking.
They are not made for tucking. Even in the 90s, I know we were tucking everything every which way, but you've got to let those babies fly. And you cannot put a jacket over a Hawaiian shirt either.
Oh, and tucked into jeans.
See, that's
that is like, something.
We're ragging on this, but honestly, it's the best Billy's ever been dressed, maybe.
That's a good point. Later on in the episode, Michael is wearing a shirt that Billy should wear, which is this fucking Pugsley Adams shirt he's wearing in the pool scene.
Oh yeah,
He's got a t-shirt with Pugsley Adams on it?
No, it's just like a striped, big horizontally striped shirt. It looks like a little kid.
It is so big. This shirt is so big on him. I tweeted a picture of this, but it is ridiculous because it's like it's going past the well past the crotch. It's down to his legs.
And it happens in a very important scene that we will talk about very soon. But
I call it my boner hider.
Yeah, you won't see my boner.
No tents here.
So Allison's like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm going out to a cruise for babes that are sure to just don't wait up. don't even think about it.
Well, and then Allison does try to like tag along.
Oh, that's right. It's sad. It's sad, kind of.
Yeah.
She's like, you're going to Shooters. Awesome. I'm going to come. I'm not going to defrost this chicken. We'll have a great night. I was like, which I do agree. Like, it's kind of, it would be hard to, you know, pick up anybody if you're with somebody, like a lady like that. It's kind of easy. You'd assume that they were together.
Well, you're going out with a looker like CTS. I mean, come on.
Exactly. Well,
he has to talk in the most baby terms imaginable. So he's like, Allison, I'm going cruising for babes. I'm going to go cruise for babes, which means I'm going to go upstairs.
Allison is the one that says cruising for babes.
Oh, is it her? Oh,
she
crap.
She just goes, because when she invites herself, he's like, and he gets stuck, and she just goes, cruising for babes.
Oh, damn, yeah.
I'm going to go nug some grindage, so.
Allison, I'm wheezing the juice. Get out of here.
Dude, that happens a lot. He's wheezing the juice in his room. He leaves the door slightly open. She's like, hey, Bill, you want to? Oh, God.
No, she says, no wheezing the juice.
Oh, Rachel's a juice. Oh.
My favorite thing. So two things happened right at the end of this scene. A, there's an Old Spice joke, which just brought me back. Back to the 90s, and I felt good for a little bit there. But also, as he's making his way from his apartment to Joe's, all of a sudden the Roseanne theme kicks in.
What is going on with this sex harmonica? Dude, that would be great if someone was just playing the Roseanne bar laugh out a window. That's a great way to punk people. You just get that really loud and then like watch people walking by.
Oh, God.
The interesting tie into the Roseanne intro, we do later get a table full of Chinese food. The Mancini household.
Yeah, they weren't playing poker around it, though.
He's actually secretly going up to Joe's. He grabs a bottle of champagne that he's stashed in like the shrubbery with some glasses. By the way, I'm hoping, Billy, if you get invited in, you rinse those glasses.
Jesus Christ, they're sitting out in the garden. There's definitely dirt in them, bugs and shit.
So he's like, he goes up to Joe's place and it's like, oh, hey, Joe, fancy meeting you here at your apartment. I noticed, I was cleaning out my fridge, I found this bottle of champagne. Wanna split it?
And immediately she's like, what smells like shit?
Why is there part of a FICA plant in one of those glasses exactly?
Oh, you like to drink spiders, right?
Drink spiders.
Oh, I'm just going to drink some spiders here, Joe. You want to get in on this? This is the latest fad.
Vintage Black Widow, Joe.
But she's like, no, I was going to do nothing. I was like, why don't we do nothing together? And she's like, no. And also, like, I don't know, dude. Like, the move is take her to Shooters. Why don't you be like, hey, Joe, I was just actually heading out to Shooters. Do you want to come along? Show you the town kind of a thing? Like, that's, like, sort of at least.
I mean, right. Never show up with boot. Like, what are you doing? Don't just show up with alcohol.
Oh, hey, Joe, how's it going? 8 o'clock, I found a bottle of champagne. You want to give me a blowjob or what?
I mean, that is the translation exactly of what is happening here, because he is not a smooth operator in the slightest. Like, well, I'm shocked that she didn't open that door and he just went, ball, fuck my dick, ball.
Oh, God.
She says, like, no, I plan on doing nothing tonight. He's like, oh, perfect. We'll do nothing together.
She's like, no, thank you. So he winds up, I guess, asking Jake or finding Jake at Shooters, and they're just drinking and lamenting, you know, this new crazy cast member they got.
There's a couple of problems here. One, you're just bringing this bottle of champagne into another bar, and the glasses? I don't think so.
What's the corking fear at Shooters is my question.
Totally. I mean, it's a fucking table service situation. Like, they're at a table. Well, no way is this going
to
fly.
Well, they've had to do, you know, behind the scenes, it's a scene you don't see, is they had to discuss since, what's her name? I've already forgotten her name.
Sandy, y'all, how could you forget me? Oh, I'm so broken, Chris Cabin. I can't believe that. My heart is broken in two, y'all. You forgot my name.
I'm sorry, y'all. but, like, Sandy was definitely, like, allowing them to do stuff like that, like sneak in their own stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
So there had to be a discussion with the manager, be like, cut the shit. Your fucking stupid Southern friend's not here anymore.
Or maybe Billy stole the champagne from Shooters and then stashed it in his bushes, and now he's just bringing it back like nothing happened.
That actually makes a ton of sense.
The second question I just had really quickly, did Grant Cho get a bad haircut at the start of this episode?
Yeah. Yes, he looks different. He doesn't look as hunky. It's weird.
It's like, a weird, like, Incredible Hulk 1970s kind of, like, mop top thing. It's not great.
He needs a trim up, man. It was distractingly bad.
He looks like Chekhov on Star Trek.
He does. That's exactly what it is. It's Walter Koenig's monkey's wig.
This episode is him beginning to get, you know, domesticated. So maybe that's a reflection of that. He has to look stupid.
Yeah, he's getting domesticated. He's finally potty trained and shit.
The only important part here is Billy does tell Jake his line of "Let's do nothing together," and he's like, "Ah, better luck next time, Billy." And then the next day, Joe is taking photos of Jake's bike, like laying on the ground, getting like these, you know, kind of angular shots. He's like, "Huh. I charge $2 a piece for those, baby." It's a good line. And, she's like, "Oh, you know, just take a picture of your bike. I'm going to head inside." And she's like, "Well, let's go for a ride." And she's like, "Oh, no, I want to do nothing." He's like, "Why don't we do nothing together?" By the way, fucking cucking Billy with his own line. Yes. Love it.
Pretty great. Yeah, this reminded me of something. Steve, did this recall any memories of something that happened to you in a similar situation?
I do not have a motorcycle.
No. I'm talking
nor
about
have the, I dated I'm, a man with a motorcycle.
But you I'm are talking, doing nothing tonight, right?
I'm talking about the line working when it didn't work for Billy.
Oh, well, I mean, kind of, sort of. Yeah, I do remember we were at a party once, and I forget the circumstances. I was sort of hitting on a woman, and something, it was right around the time League of Extraordinary Gentlemen came out.
Oh, wow.
and something came up. It fell into conversation, and I just did a Sean Connery, "Well, she's out of your league," and like nothing. And she's like, "Okay, bye."
This girl turned into a statue.
And then 10 minutes later, my better looking friend is talking to her, and something, "She's out of your league." And she starts cackling. And I'm like, "Oh, that just makes it."
Dude, when it happened in this episode, my brain shot right back to that party. I couldn't even believe it.
I should have turned around and looked, "Well, I'm sorry, I'm short," and stormed out. That's what I should have said. But I didn't. So they wind up going. He, like, takes her to the fucking makeout point here on the motorcycle. She's driving, I think, right? Is that what's happening?
Yes. She's driving, because this is where he goes, "Where'd you learn to ride like that?" And she casually goes, "Oh, prison," which I thought was kind of funny. This is a weird, it didn't look like a makeout ridge to me. It looked like abandoned factory, middle of nowhere.
I know what,
like,
this is. This is where he disposes of the bodies.
Absolutely correct.
Yep.
100%
yep,
correct.
It's the riverboat strangler. This is where he calls going to the docks.
"Hey, you want to check out the ravine with me, man?"
"Look, I can only put so many in the water after I'm done with them, okay? You have to understand. I have to bring some of them to land."
Some have to go out in the desert, dude.
See, that's how he confuses the police. He strangles them on the water and then drags them to this desert ravine.
My favorite thing
we call him the wet, dry killer.
It's like Hannibal. It really is like Hannibal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Is it the strike?
I mean, it's amazing she like survives this encounter.
Well, my favorite thing is the ride there. They start having motorcycle sexy talk.
Oh, yeah?
Like, she's like revving it up and be like, "Oh, oh, the power. And like his response to that is like, oh yeah, you better watch out or you might swallow a moth.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a weird, because she's like, this is so great. And he goes, yeah, let's see how great it is when you swallow a moth at 60 miles an hour. And I was like, what else do you want swallowed at 60 miles an hour?
Yeah, I come at 60 miles an hour. Just shoots out like a gun. I come 1 mile at a time.
But she's like, hey, man, actually, I head back into town because I got this job interview. And I mean, if I'm Jake, I'm like, didn't you have nothing to do all day? And he's like, oh, I'll drive you. Like, he drops her off.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
He drops her off. She winds up going into a pawn. She like kind of does a quick turnaround, goes into a pawn shop and tries to pawn her this bracelet she has. It's worth at least 10 grand, but the guy wants to give her 7. We're haggling. And he's like, I just need a photo ID. She's like, I don't have one, which I do not understand this part of the story.
It's garbage. And she does the whole like, because later it comes up again. I think Jake is like, what do you mean you don't have ID? And she's like, what New Yorker do you know that has a driver's license? And it's like, yeah, but there's also just state issued IDs.
Because you need it to exist. Well, you know what I mean?
Right. I don't really know. Like 92, I guess maybe you could have gotten a flight across the country without showing a fucking ID of any kind.
But
I don't
also
know.
Getting an apartment. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know how this woman doesn't have an ID. Like, it just seems very bizarre to me.
Well, she barely filled out that application in the last episode and really just Jane let her into the apartment.
Maybe she has a passport for those kinds of things, but doesn't want to be showing it for like financial transactions.
It's very bizarre. So she winds up storming out of this place because the guy won't give her the 7 grand without an ID, which is, that's totally right. And Jake is waiting for her and he's like, huh, some job interview at a pawn shop. And she's like, are you following me? And he's like, yep, you're mine now.
You're in the web of the fucking Riverboat Strangler.
Yeah, he's casing the joint before he hits it.
And she's actually like fairly like amenable because he's hot. You know, she's like, oh, you're silly. She doesn't take a ride back with him to Melrose Place.
I don't know about the you're so she's
oh, no, yeah,
she pissed,
pissed. Yeah, she is
pissed. Because he offers a ride. He's like, all right, well, let's just go home. And she's like, I'll find another way. And he's like, all right. And there was a weird shot of like, it's like Grant Show actually in traffic with this motorcycle. And I was like, oh, and you see him, he looks and makes sure that no cars are coming. I was like, oh, thank God, because it does not look like this road is closed.
If I'm Jake, I'm starting to believe she's a jewelry thief.
Yeah,
like yeah, a cat burglar.
She keeps on going to like these places where there's a lot of diamonds and gold stuff. She's photographing everything.
She wears black all the time and sneakers for sneaking.
And it's 92. You might hear more a little bit about like actual jewel thieves hitting like rich people.
Yeah, it is. When we get to the end of the episode where she kind of reveals everything in quotation marks, it's a bit deflated because she's acting like she's killed somebody. Or something, like the way she's like, I can't go back to New York. But I don't know what I don't know who Beth is. Who's Beth? Who's Beth? We can just actually we'll cut in right now with Matt's fucking wet fart of a storyline.
Yeah, this let's get crazy. This over with.
It is
fucking trash.
I was shocked, by the way, that they actually brought this storyline back. I thought they were just going to like leave that thread hanging.
They might as well have not, because it's such a nothing. Like they wind up, it's Matt in his lawyer's office. Judith Hogue, the great Judith Hogue, comes back.
Oh yeah,
Original April O'Neil for those uninitiated. She's. And she's like, hey, they offer. Hey, guess what I heard from the halfway house? They're offering you your job back. And he's like, great, I'll take it. They're like, well, no, you know, this isn't enough. They're not going to learn it, their lesson unless they pay for it, et cetera, et cetera. It's funny because I just watched the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer sues the cafe latte. The cafe au lait company or whatever. And they're like, well, we'll give you free lattes wherever you want and sold. You know? Like,
yes. There's a great line that Matt has right here because, like, he's so excited to fucking just take the job back. Yeah. And she's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he goes, Sarah, I miss Kenny and Tiny D.
Yes!
Dude, Tiny D, I lost my shit.
Of course. I mean, like, later on, he meets somebody from the halfway house, and I was expecting, like, oh, so how's Tiny D?
Totally. Or maybe that was Tiny D. Like, oh, he
They call him Tiny D because his dick is really small, right?
Yes, I think that's the idea. Okay. Yeah, his name's Jason.
Jason, better known to his friends as Tiny D.
It is nice to see that Matt, like, truly cares about that job and all the kids and Tiny D's and whatever else. But, like, this dude Pete shows up at the burger shack he's working at. And
anybody catch this guy, by the way?
Is that Jeremy Davies?
It's Jeremy Davies. Dude, a baby-faced Jeremy Davies. I couldn't believe it.
That really makes sense now. Now that you've said that, it all clicks into place. And he's doing, like, a weird Joker laugh and stuff.
Yes, he is, dude. Oh, man, that was terrifying. And also, you never want to tell somebody they have a terrible laugh. Like, Matt is like, oh, because he's not sure if it's the guy he thinks it is. And then finally, Jeremy Davies laughs, and Matt's like, oh, yeah, it's you. You know, whatever his name is. He's like, oh, Pete is the guy's name. He's like, oh, yeah, that horrible laugh tortured me for years.
Thank God I was rid of it. Nice to see you, I guess.
Yeah, totally. It's such a slam.
And it's great because, like, you know, and he's just like, oh, you know, he's a kid from the halfway house that made good. And he's like, you know, whenever I'm out in the boulevard, and he's like, oh, you go back to the boulevard? I was like, well, no, I'm not hustling anymore. But, you know, I think about you. You really helped me out. It's kind of a nice, like, he learned his lesson and
It's very nice. It shows that, like, you know, Matt has really been making an impact on these young people's lives, and that they can go on and do something else. He feels very fulfilled in that role at the halfway house in a way he's not at the burger shack.
And Bikini Burger?
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised, because it was Jeremy Davies, and it's an interesting character. I was like, oh, wow, is he going to be back for more? No, he's not. It's a one and done.
Well, oh, no, I mean, like, at the end of it, he does sew Matt up in a horse and leaves him there for Hannibal to find.
I never got that far into the series.
Oh, man, you are missing out.
I've thought about going back and checking it out.
Because everyone, there's a bit of a Hannibal reappraisal going on because it's on Netflix now, and I'm kind of, I too fell off it.
I dug those first two seasons, but I never went back.
I never watched any of it. I guess I just said nay, Chris. Huh?
That's so wonderful.
That's something.
I was like, oh, cool. It's like this weird hustler guy from Matt's past. Is there going to be some tension here? Is he, like, almost going to date this guy and then not date him or whatever? You know what I mean? I'm like, interesting. No, not for Matt.
No.
You know, just nothing. So
yeah, definitely not.
The third scene is just he goes back to Judith Hoag's office and she's like, hey, look, they're actually going to offer a settlement of $10,000 and your job back. And he's like, great, tell Tiny D I'll be there in 5 minutes.
and this is like, it's kind of bullshit because the message here is like, don't worry, those people will just be happy to have their job back. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it fucking sucks. Yeah. Like the nice button on it is at least he tells Rhonda, it's like a fucking 13-second throwaway scene that he's using the 10 grand, he's donating it all to start a legal aid fund to help, people who get fired for sexual orientation, which is fine, but it's like they should have fucking taken these dudes to the cleaners.
It's not as bad as what I was fearing, which was that it was going to be like, look, if you take this further, we're going to have to close the halfway house.
Right.
Yeah.
My real fear of how this this is not that bad, but it still sucks.
There goes the orphanage. I mean,
yep,
I
there guess, goes Tiny D, dude.
I mean, Matt has a point here when he says, like, I don't want to be tied up in a court for a year. I want to actually make a difference in people's lives, so I can understand him taking the money and going back.
Sure. But it's also like, I don't know, like, aren't there other halfway houses he could work at? You know what I mean? Like, that aren't discriminatory, that there's other Tiny D's out there.
But there's only one halfway house that has Kenny and Tiny D, dude.
There are big D's. There are small D's. There are all kinds of D's.
People have big D's. People have small D's.
People find D's. They lose them.
Oh, losing the D, dude.
Don't lose the D. Jesus. Anyway. Fuck, what was I saying? Oh, because, you know, I mean, Matt is kind of maybe smart here not to pursue further legal action because we didn't see success in it until 2020.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's also that.
Yeah, because Judith Hogue's like, you know, we could sue them for like 100 grand and it would be great. You know what I mean? It would really...
Got her fucking career in the...
Which is kind of a bummer. Like, she should be more like, hey, look, the only way these people are going to understand is if they have to pay $100,000. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. But she's not. It's only $100,000.
Exactly. You know?
I was kind of half expecting like, oh, OK, so we're not going to pursue it. It's not going to advance my lawyering career. So this is no longer pro bono. My fee is 10 grand.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
It is just so weird, though, that she winds up. I mean, like, they set this whole thing up and they really just like totally abandon the side plot immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they decided to like dip their toe in the water and it was like, ah!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They kind of wrote themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
It's more interesting to see, you know, the ins and outs of low fashion through Jane Mancini.
Let's
get there. Jane's subplot is she winds up she gets a call in the middle of the night, by the way. It's like 11:30. She's like, she's getting out of some fucking with her husband.
No, the fucking is just begun. That's the unfortunate part.
Michael's like, oh, jeez, I'm getting all come on with the phone calls already.
Oh, jeez, I didn't even get my boxer shorts off yet, Michael.
Jeez. She gets a call in the middle of the night that her job is closed. They sold it. They're mailing her a check, but she has to come pick up her personal effects. Like, can't I just fucking pick up the check tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a thing of, like, the payroll isn't going to go through, you know, for a certain point and yada yada.
I totally forgot she had a job.
Yeah.
So did the show. And then they were like, oh, we better fucking do something about that.
Yeah, she was just always coming home for lunch, it seems like.
Or she's always waiting for Michael to get back from the hospital. So she winds up going to work. She's clearing out her shit. There's this insane woman marching around the studio because she just bought it. And she turns out to be the big shot designer, Kay Beacon.
Oh, the Kay Beacon. Played
by Sydney Walsh. A nice 90210 name there.
She has a voice that made me think she was in league with Malachi Throne. Mm. She's very like, hi, yeah. Hello, Jane. Why don't you come work for me?
There's definitely a smoldering evil under the surface.
A little bit, right?
she had a movie career here. She's in Point Break as Miss Deer. She's in Nightmare on Elm Street 2 as Carrie. So there's some stuff going on.
Yeah, I was trying to see what she looked like in
Nightmare 2.
In Nightmare 2. It doesn't look
she's
like she's
pretty low on the cast, so she probably was like, you know, like woman number 4 or something like that. Whatever. So she's like this. This performance is kind of nuts. I don't know. Is she supposed to be drunk? Is she high? She's like, oh, hello. Look at you. Aren't you a cute one with your buttons and your shirts and things? And you think you're Kay Beacon. You're not Kay Beacon. I am.
My line in my notes was, Jane, you fuck up. I love you. And that seems to be her idea of Jane throughout this whole episode.
Because she's like, oh, nice dress that you designed yourself, did you? Interesting. It's just a knockoff of one of my designs. And she's like, well, no, it's not. Well, it is, but anyway, you got a job if you want it. It's like, what?
Dude, the whiplash that I got in this scene with this, like, gaslighting maniac. Like, I could not figure out what was going on. I couldn't gauge what she was doing because it's just a lot of, like, you know, mood swingy, almost like 1 second she's just like being super mean. And I mean, I guess that's kind of the point of it also, because Jane herself can't, she says later she can't get a read on this woman.
Well, right when she enters the scene, the first thing she's like, oh my God, is this a plus size store?
Yes.
What the hell is going on here? Oh my God. And who are you? You're a knockoff of a knockoff, but you did it smartly. smartly.
It's like someone's there to clear out their desk and it's like, oh, wait a second. Stop there, you. This is a surprise job interview. And by the way, you're shit.
Yeah. Also, do you want the job? Like, what?
It's like a job interview where they're negging you the whole time. Mm.
Well, I just was able to sum up what this actor's career is like here. She, between 1997 and 1998, made at least one, maybe two appearances acting in reenactments for Beyond Belief Factor Fiction.
That sounds right.
So that's all you need to know.
When she walks in and Jane does a, like, oh, yes, I'm leaving now. I just have to get my design book.
Oh, right. Yeah, you're right.
And she takes a look and she calls her a piece of trash, but she needs her immediately to work on her brand new line, I guess.
So she gets this cool new job. She's working for her. The next day, she's working there. And She's like, so you said you knew how to do this? And she's like, I do. Well, you don't know how to do it the Cape Beacon way. By the way, here's a free dress. What the fuck?
Did I mention I'm Cape Beacon?
Would you like pizza, Jane? Yes. Of course you would, because it's fucking terrible. I'll have 3 slices. What? It's just a very bizarre performance.
Oh, Jane, would you like to unload this gun in your mouth? No? Well, of course not. Suicide is bad. No, girl.
Man, Bud Dwyer's last words.
The other part, so she's like kind of talking to Michael. And Michael, you've got to give this woman a long leash here because you've been talking about the hospital this whole fucking show.
Oh, my dude, this fucking asshole. Like, it's been one day. One day this woman has had this job, and he's like, yeah, you know, can we get your boss out of the conversation already, Bungle?
Also, you're a week off from befriending a fucking wife abuser. Like, maybe fucking take it easy. Maybe give some space.
By the way, what's the update there? That woman dead? What happened? We have fucking no idea. We're never going to mention those people ever again.
No, of course, I called in Malachi Throne, and they were disappeared.
Erase the chessboard. A new game starts next week on Fox.
So, like, it's kind of a back and forth. They start to almost have sex, and she's like, okay, let me go into the other room really quick. And she goes to the bathroom to get her diaphragm out. And Michael's like, whoa, hold on. Aren't we fucking making babies? Are we not making babies or what?
I was ready to knock you up, babe.
What's the point of nutting if the nut doesn't become a baby?
And she's like...
Turns out he had nothing to worry about.
Oh, wow. Remember Nuttin' Honey, the cereal?
I do.
Yeah.
What was that? That was like...
an adult-only cereal?
It's cornflakes frosted with semen.
Well, no, it was just... It was like a granola thing. And the ad campaign was like, what's wrong? Nuttin' Honey, and you'd be eating this cereal, but it's like as a nothing, but it's nut and honey.
Yeah.
Nuts and honey.
Yeah, it was dumb.
But anyway, so they have this whole kind of blowout here where he's like, you know, and also, Jane, here's the move. Pro tip, just fucking secretly take birth control if you're not ready to get pregnant. Your husband wants to have a baby. Like, that's easy. Everybody does that.
Absolutely. Also, a finer point of advice here, and this goes for cast members on this show, characters on this show, characters on Beverly Hills 90210. Close the door.
Also true.
Because she's just got the bathroom door wide open. He's like, hey, this hog ain't going to be on the farm forever. What's going on?
Oh, babe, I thought we said we watch each other's shit all the time.
I'm losing it in here, Jane. We are running out of air.
He's such a piece of shit to her in this scene. It's crazy.
Yeah, because like, well, we thought we were going to have a baby. She's like, well, not right now. I just got this brand new job. I want to see it through. And he's like, okay, fine. Back to the hospital for me.
Yeah, like she goes one step further and does say, she's like, and honestly, Michael, I'm here having serious doubts about having a child at all right now. And he's like, I'm going to go to bed. Buckled.
So that's kind of her thing. She goes back the next day and the boss is giving her more shit here.
Kate Beacon is just outside like ranting to herself. Clothes are bullshit, but they're life, but they're not shit. Jane, you're shit, but you love, you know, I love you. I love you so much. She's just like spitting at people on the sidewalk.
It is, well, because my favorite line of this whole thing, this is kind of the last bit of it, is like she asked Jane her opinion on her new line, and she's like, well, you know, I think the buttons should be a little bit bigger, and this should have a belt on it. And she's like, if the buttons are bigger, then they'll sag, and they'll look unneat. Where were you when they taught buttons in fucking design school? Or she's like, were you absent on button day? Which I do. I just imagined. All right, everybody, settle down. Yes, you've all on bated breath. It's been a year. It's time. It's button day.
Here's a traditional two-holer. We're going to move on to four-holers next week.
Here's a good thing to remember, everybody. Some buttons weigh more than other buttons. Easy way to tell that from either the material they're made with or sometimes one button will be bigger than another one. Is everyone taking notes?
Now, everybody, a button has to go in a button hole. I cannot stress that enough. but then Michael winds up showing up with a picnic basket. Because Jane's ready to quit or get fired, but, you know.
She flat out is just like, listen, you're a very confusing person, and I don't understand why you're being such a rotten bitch to me the whole time. And it's a fucking crazy, like, she's like, Jane, step into my office. And I was like, here we go. It's going to be a spectacular firing. And she's like, you're right, Jane. I'm a total piece of shit. But I think that you could be a great total piece of shit with me if you can stick in and last for another week or, you know, whatever the line is.
Yeah.
This picnic basket, by the way.
I think the line, by the way, was, you could be shit junior.
Junior shit associate.
Yeah, the picnic basket's fucking crazy. I thought Yogi Bear was going to walk by.
It's kind of funny, though, because this K Beacon is like, it's a delivery. Someone signed for it in the back. And she's like, no, this is my husband.
The delivery boy is your husband?
Okay, who ordered the pasta primavera? Honestly, guys.
Because I hate it, because I love it so much.
It's the most disgusting food, and it's my favorite thing I'll ever eat. Actually, you know what? Pasta primavera, you can keep it.
Yeah, not a big fan.
It depends. Depends on who's making it.
Eh. But I always think about the pasta primavera on Seinfeld.
I haven't eaten that one.
I'm sure I've had pasta primavera, but I don't even know what that is.
It's like a white sauce, I want to say.
There's like vegetables in it and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, vegetables can fuck right off.
Exactly. Give me some red sauce with some sausage in it.
That's what I want.
Hey, put some Axe body spray on that too, just to make it a little bit more masculine if you wish.
Not that I have tried the pasta primavera from Seinfeld, but it's what gives Russell Dalrymple food poisoning in the right episode.
Yes, it does.
Also, Axe body spray in your fucking pasta. I think like...
So she's like, you know what, Jane? I fucking hate your guts, but your husband's beautiful. Have a picnic on the roof. Bye, everybody. But they do have a picnic on the roof.
Nice rooftop. Mm. This is a nice work perk. I think she's seeing things like the K Beacon way now.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically he's like, listen, Jane, you've always been so supportive. I'll be supportive too, I guess. We'll have a baby whenever we do. You're 21 years old. We got a little time.
Also, I got some news today. That wife that we helped, she's dead. They found her in a ditch. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jane.
Well, actually, she actually killed her sister, and then she was talking about something about an invisible man suit.
That's what this show definitely needed worked into. It was the Invisible Man.
I like the idea. Michael Mancini's now just on like fucking murder cadaver work.
That's, you know, they kind of clink and they're like, all right, let's give this another go. Back to, well, there's the Billy subplot here, which we'll get into before we get back to Joe, which is he's got a toothache. And I mean, okay. He winds up going to the dentist. Allison's like, you got to go to the dentist. And when he comes back and he's like, Alpha, somebody needs to take care of me.
He's definitely saying thanks, Mom, more than once in this episode and really gave me the heebie-jeebies.
It's weird because he's like, Alpha, could you go to the video store and give me a comic book, the bubble gum? And she's
ice cream.
And she's like, good movies would help like him like recover from the tooth.
Hey, Allison. Allison, go rent me a bunch of pornography. Could you do that? A couple of porno tapes, you know?
Batman. What about Batman?
By the way, Chris, you're right. He does say Mom a bit here, referencing Allison, and I thought it was very interesting. Right after calling Allison his mother several times, he has a vivid sex dream about her.
He does indeed.
Been there. But no, so she's like, hey, it's amazing what a shithead he is. She's like, oh, you know, I don't know. I that's a little bit too much, Billy. He's like, hey, I just nursed you through a broken heart. You fucking owe me. I mean, like, you know, and like, that's the thing is like, if I, you know, we all live together in various parts of our life. If you were sick, I'd be like, hey, man, that sucks. Talk to you later because I'm just your roommate. Yep.
Exactly. Like, we're not dating. Like, Billy, you're not dating her. Like, she has no obligation to fucking help you out at all.
Exactly. Especially after this line where Billy says that he got drilled so deep that he could hear people speaking Chinese.
Isn't that something?
So the dentist drilled through his tooth, through his body, down into the ground, through the magma core of the earth, and back out again.
I heard some Danish on the way, but that might have been just the dentist.
No, he heard the fucking screams from hell, dude, like Art Bell.
Yes.
She even says, she's like, I don't know, I think you should probably just go home to recuperate, a.k.a. leave me the fuck out of it.
Yeah, she's like, I think you should go recoup at your parents' house.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, no, just that spell week there, it's going to take forever. I can't fucking relax with brimstone around, okay, Allison?
I can't cross my dad's pentagram, all right? He warned me.
Allison, the smell of sulfur with this medication is going to make me throw up. I keep telling you.
Look, oh, God, did you kick the line of salt at our door? Oh, no. Oh, no, we're fucked.
Oh, my dad's going to be so mad.
Like Eric said, he does... he goes to sleep, and you know it's a dream sequence right away.
Which is fine by me. They actually do a good job of doing like some soft lighting here, so you're like, all right.
And CTS is dressed like a porno actress in this scene.
Uh-huh. Oh, just like the video that I wanted. This is perfect.
We start because he's just going, Allison, Allison, it is sleep, and then we cut to this.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I want to take care of you, Billy. And they start making out hardcore.
Dude, and when they cut back to, like, just Billy on the couch, he is fucking this pillow.
He is absolutely 100% humping a pillow. And Allison's like, and he's like, Allison, Allison, oh, Allison, Allison. And she, like, has to shake, like, Billy, is everything okay? He's like, oh, I was just having a weird dream.
I don't even remember Allison coming into the scene. It was almost like she was like behind the couch and popped up to see him. And she's also acting really weird. Like, she's very giggly in this scene.
Yeah, because she knows she's been watching. She's heard this. The way they edit it bad, which is why it's confusing. But like, I think you're supposed to glean that like she heard him shouting from the other room and came in and then was like clearly able to realize like, oh, he's probably having a sex dream about us and was just like watching it for a little bit.
And like, I mean, like, this is why you don't sleep in the common areas, folks. If you're having a sex dream about your roommate, which is common and fine and regular.
and at I least speak, in Astoria when we were there.
Exactly. Yes. You don't want to be calling out their name. You can go do that behind closed doors and you can come in all you want.
And here's the thing. If, in fact, you fall asleep in the common room, have a sex dream about your roommate, they hear you yelling their voice, see you or yelling their name, see you also kind of humping a pillow, and they wake you up and say, hey, what is that dream about? You need to come up with something better than, oh, there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex that came in, Allison, and he got you. And she's like, well, what the fuck were you pulling that pillow for, buddy? And he's like, oh, that was the dinosaur's tail, Allison. Yeah, Great job, Billy.
I was fucking the dinosaur.
Yeah, I was going to say, why is this pillow so damp here, Billy?
Well, Allison, you know the song, Everyone Do the Dinosaur? I was doing the dinosaur.
Over the door, on the floor, everybody do the dinosaur. See, Allison?
See, but we're also, we're talking from a privileged point of view with that sleeping in your room thing. Because, like, if you want to watch The Secret of Nim, as he is clearly doing before this happens,
yeah,
like, you can't just, you have to do it out in the living room. You don't have a personal TV with a VCR in it.
That's true.
That's true.
And he 100% doesn't know how to read. So yeah.
Also, yeah, like, I mean, great fucking writing, Billy. Oh, a dinosaur. Like, come on.
Exactly, dude. Like, what are you fucking doing?
I hope you're a better fucking cab driver than you are a writer, pal. Because
it was a dinosaur. I was hitting the back walls of the Jurassic era.
So that's kind of their little subplot there. And
she tries to get him the next morning to talk about it, and he fucking like kind of comes clean with it, and he's like, you know, that ever happened to you, Alvin? And she says like, yeah, I've had sex dreams about you. And he tries to get her to like tell him, and he goes, you're not leaving this room until you tell me about this dream. And she's like, goodbye, and fucking walks out on him.
It's great. So back to Jo. She tried to sell this necklace, this bracelet. So then she goes to Jake, like, hey, Jake, you know, you want to be my friend. I'm in a jam here. Could you go and sell this bracelet? I don't have an ID. Who drives in New York? Question mark. And he's like, okay. And he goes to a different pawn shop. And the guy's like, all right. He haggles the guy up to $7,000. And he's like, I just need your ID. Oh, by the way, who's Beth? And he's like, Beth? Beth? And the guy's like, the name on the bracelet? He's like, I mean, like, dude, come on, dude.
And again, it's my fucking dead grandmother. Let's get on with our lives.
Exactly.
Okay, Mr. Burns, what's your first name?
I don't know.
This guy used to be a fucking con artist. Not a good one, I guess.
Who's Anthony?
Beth, yeah, that's my brother. Wait. Oh, boy. Fuck.
All right, Joe, we got to go to another jewelry store. Joe, I fucked it up. I said brother again. I keep fucking it up. Jake, you've said brother, grandfather, uncle.
Because, I mean, it's so easy. Who's Beth? Oh, that was my ex-girlfriend. Oh, stay away from redheads. Yeah. Oh, it's my dead grandmother. Anything.
Exactly. It didn't work out. Bah, bah, bah. You got your money.
But the like,
men of Melrose Place really need to learn how to fucking think on their feet. This is ridonkulous.
Because then he's like, I'm actually just selling it for a friend. And the guy's like, listen, I don't want this stolen fucking necklace. You got to get out of here.
You know, also, Jake, maybe look at the thing you're trying to sell before you sell it.
Exactly. And also, this is also on Joe a little bit. You have to know that that's going to come up.
Exactly.
You know that it's there. It's your necklace. Just be like, also, look, here's this. It's my dead grandmother.
Joe is a real piece of shit in this episode. Cool. She's like, it's like a photo finish between her and Kay Beacon.
Because Jake confronts her. She's waiting outside. And she's like, did you get the money, Jake? And he's like, well, no, because I fucked up this whole Beth scenario. Who's Beth anyway? She's like, I don't want to talk about it. And he's like, well, no, you know, you owe me. Who's Beth? What the fuck's going on?
Well, Jake, that's my grandmother. And stay away from redheads.
He's like, oh, good one.
He flips out and fucking does a kind of dangerous peel out on this motorcycle. There were some extras passing by right here. And this is a active motorcycle scene.
It's kind of great because he leaves her with the motorcycle helmet, though.
Yep.
So she's got to walk home with that. And she, like, kind of has a breakdown cry outside of wherever, like, oh, everything's going so poorly. The next morning, Jake is awakened by police, and he's like, I didn't do it!
It's so funny how often the police come to Jake's apartment.
I know, it's a weekly occurrence.
I just had this image of him, like, stuffing body parts into a closet like Stanley Ipkiss with the money when he sees the police at the door.
Well, 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 Jake Hansen, if it isn't Thursday again already.
Oh, man, Jake with the mask? Forget about it.
Oof, oh, nightmare. Fuck.
Countless dude. Dead.
But they're like, hey, did you loan your motorcycle to this woman? And it's Joe, and she's like, yeah, he did. And he lets her slide with it. He gets a ticket because she didn't have a motorcycle license. And he's flipping out on her, and she's like, what, Jake? I made a mistake or something.
Dude, it's fucking outrageous. And her offer is a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, all right, Jake, how about this? I'll help you pay half the ticket. No, the whole fucking ticket, lady.
Exactly.
I just saved you from getting arrested for stealing my motorcycle.
Also, like, she broke into his apartment, right? There was a mention, like, she found the spare key under the rock, and then I guess went in and got his motorcycle keys. Like, was he asleep? Was he gone? This is egregious. She hasn't, like, earned any type of friendship with anyone in this place, so she's already breaking into shit and stealing motorcycles.
And what's wild is when they push back on it, she's like, but I'm a damaged person with secrets!
No, she's just a jewel thief. She broke into his house, of course.
We come to find one of the secrets is, like, oh, her husband is one of those old money Mayflower families. Okay, now you've just become even less sympathetic.
And she's like, you got to make it up to me. You got to take me to dinner. Because I'd be like, you know what, lady? Thanks, but no thanks. I'll pay the ticket. Just never, ever talk to me ever again. You lunatic.
Yeah, totally. Like, this is the last time we will speak, and I am counting the days until you move out of this place.
You know, what is with this? All these, I guess because Mel Rowe is in league with Malachi Throne to sacrifice young singles to the demon gods. But, right. Like, why? You know, it'd be fun if, like, an old woman or an old man, like, yeah. moved into this complex. A little comic relief.
Hey, who's ready to get laid?
A special appearance by Walter Matthau. Oh,
they could impart sage-like advice.
Walter Matthau and Eli Wallach are like sharing an apartment.
Oh my god!
Have like their pullout chart, their pullout chairs in front of their apartment every day.
I got a hot date with Rhonda tonight.
Bet you didn't see that coming.
They're like out drinking Jake and shit.
Yes.
Oh, that would be fucking awesome.
Well, what are you gonna do? You gonna bring her flowers? You gonna bring her chocolates? What are you gonna do there?
I don't know. I never did it this way before. We'll figure it out.
You know,
you go.
I would love it if there's a scene. It's Walter Matthau and Jake. They're at Shooters. And they're doing the Marion Ravenwood shots contest.
Yep. I like
and
it.
And Jake goes down.
We've been talking about it, but not talking about it. So this pool scene, it's Michael is cleaning the pool. He's like, you know, it's my week off, and I would love a little bit of understanding. But meanwhile, we've got somebody who is painting the, I found paint cans in our new tenant's garbage. And
oh yeah,
black paint for the dark room, which by the way, she paints the bathroom even though half of it is pink tile. I don't know.
Also in a two-bedroom apartment. Yes. And in that last episode she specified, I need a two-bedroom because I need a dark room.
Well, no. Yes. But she pisses and shits in the other room instead.
Oh, the old switcheroo.
Yeah, I'll just use like pile up.
I'll use the bathtub and the toilet for the photos, and I'll just shit and piss in a bucket.
LA living is great.
Do I just
Joe Reynolds?
Do I just throw it into the pool? Is that how it works, Mike?
Someone keeps throwing shit in the pool like it's the Middle Ages, Bukulk.
And then Billy picks up the piece of shit. Oh, it's okay. It's just a payday. And starts eating it.
I can't believe it over here. The new tenant is shitting in my pool.
Dude!
I got heart surgery in 20 minutes.
I didn't even know girls did that.
It was a Baby Ruth. Payday does not have chocolate on the outside.
That's good. That's right. But Billy's like, oh, yeah, well, that's pretty weird. Black paint. You don't know about the ins and outs of Satanism?
What is it? Because he's saying something about like, oh, well, what's the matter, Michael? You scared for a little diversity around here?
Yes.
What do you got against the Church of Satan or something?
Yes, it's fucking crazy. Well, first of all, I mean, they reference black paint. And I think Billy just says like, oh, diversity around here, which is a shit ass line, by the way. Yeah. And then I guess turns it into a Satanist thing.
Yeah,
instead.
You know what it is? I think it's the thing where he makes that line because you know who is coming up right behind them is Rhonda, and I think he's like, oh, fuck. I mean, what with Satanists and all, right, Michael? Oh, hey, Rhonda, didn't see you there.
Yeah, see, he would have pissed off Rhonda there, but instead now he pissed off Malachi Throne.
Yes.
He pissed off Mel Rowe.
Yep, they have ears everywhere.
Yeah.
The pool is his domain. He
That's
lives
right.
at the
it
bottom
talks
of it.
At night.
It's his fucking front door.
And if I was living there, I would think Joe is one of his emissaries.
But that's kind of it. She also, by the way, she changes the locks on her door.
Like, has this person ever rented an apartment?
And Michael's like, okay, cool. I need a key. And she's like, why? It's like, well, yeah, because that's how that works.
Like, you don't own the apartment. Idiot.
We didn't mention it, but there's a great scene of when Jake eats a donut with excessive dipping.
Oh, dude. Dunkin', yeah, drinking that Dunkin' donut.
It's awesome.
Never dunked a donut. Not a donut dunked.
You?
Oh, I've dunked?
Yeah.
You're lying.
I'm not
lying. Dunked a donut?
I do not like it. I don't want a fucking donut in my coffee.
It's good, dude.
You just do like a brisk dip, dude. You're not letting it swim around in there.
You dip your pizza in your beer or what?
Ooh, maybe I'll try that tonight.
I will say this. It's better when you do it, like, you should do it in, like, a diner or an actual place where you go to get, like, donuts specifically. He's doing it with what looks like an Entenmann's made in 1975.
That's the problem with the dipping here, by the way. I am a firm believer that the only donut to be dunked is a plain Dunkin' Donut.
Yes, the old-fashioned is preferable.
Yeah, you don't get fucking powdered sugar in there.
Steve, you've literally never done it before?
I mean, I think I've done it, and I didn't like it. I'm not a dunker.
Fair enough.
All
right into the mailbag if you're Dunkin' Donuts, dude.
We actually don't, because we have 10 million emails.
Because it's so common.
That's right.
All right. You need to cut your fucking sandwiches in half, then we'll talk.
I don't think so.
Never happening.
So they go out to dinner. We don't see that, but we do see them going to some hip club afterwards. It looks like a landing strip.
Private Pain.
Yeah, it's a sex club. And
totally.
And she's like, oh, cool. I want to go in here and take pictures for my portfolio. There's so many celebrities here.
Here's the thing about her request for, I need this for my portfolio. If that's the case, if you're a real deal photographer, bring in a better camera than shit that my aunt would use to take pictures at Easter. This little tiny, like, personal, non-professional camera she takes out. And I kind of get it because it's like, there's some sign about, like, no pictures.
It's a sign that says, no drugs, no cameras.
That's what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's where I want to be.
You would think, though, if you had a no cameras policy, you'd be fine with letting the drugs in.
No drugs, no cameras. We mean one of these.
It is Los Angeles.
No drugs in quotation marks. Definitely no cameras underlined.
That's kind of what sucks is I kind of wanted to see the inside of this place. I thought it would be like the club from Bad Boys.
You know
like
what?
The Basic Instinct.
The finger thing means the money because they think they only some guy shows up and is like, oh, hey, Beth, it's me, Ronald. Remember me? And she's like, I don't know you. And
wrong lady.
That's right. And he's like, come on, Beth, what the fuck? And Jake is like, hey, man, the lady said she didn't know you. Leave her alone. And the guy's like, okay. And he starts swinging at Jake.
I love it. He gets a hit in, I think. And then Jake just fucking cleans this dude's clock and leaves his body laying in the street.
There is a shot of that guy just laying on the ground totally dead. And then it's Jake going, hey, Joe? Just Joe, walking away.
Joe, I need someone to help load this guy on the motorcycle so we can go to the ravine.
He's definitely getting ready to do something here because he keeps on like smelling her erotically.
Yeah.
And like trying to get a kiss in. And I'm like, oh man, you're not on the riverboat yet. You got to bide your time here, buddy.
But she ghosts him here, leaves him with the dead body. And he's like, come on, Joe. I knocked them out. You go through their pockets. That's how this works.
Joe, when he fell after my punch, he hit his head on a rock.
He goes back to Melrose Place and he's like, what the fuck, Joe? You left me there. And she's just like, I'm a very difficult person or something. And again, like, it just, and like, I think that then the next morning he goes back to her apartment and he's like, listen, lady, we need to figure this out because I like you a lot. You're great, but I need to know some stuff. And I'm like, what's great about her, really? Like, she's attractive, sure, but it's Melrose Place and everybody's attractive.
Well, because it's, I think, dude, it stems from the convo they had back at the Ravine earlier in the episode, because they're both talking about how, like, they grew up as, you know, on their own a lot, so they got used to being alone. They like being alone, and they're talking about how that's, like, you know, like, oh, Jake's like, yeah, I love the freedom of, like, being on my own and everything. And I think they're realizing, like, oh, fuck, the two of us could be alone together, right? It's like, do nothing together, be alone together.
Yeah, cut back to that scene and we get an extended piece like, yeah, I buried Melissa alone down there. I buried Samantha alone down there. There's a bunch of them I did alone.
But the way that they were treating this whole who's Beth story, it's very like Lynchian almost. Just like, Joe is both Joe and Beth.
You see, this is another weird story I'm setting in Los Angeles.
Suddenly, she's like played by Bill Pullman, who's Daphne Sarghetti or whatever.
Joe goes into the motorcycle club as Daphne Zuniga. Bang, she comes out, Bill Pullman.
I love it. Like now some lightning crashes.
And that's right. Jake is dunking his donuts like it's 1958. I love it.
That's right. Actually, That dude is a dunker.
Oh, you kidding me?
Guaranteed David Lynch dunks donuts and
definitely,
coffee.
Definitely. And then Robert Blake comes out and says, I'm at your house dunking donuts right now.
And David Lynch only eats dunking donuts. Like, he thinks it's too fancy with the powdered sugar and the glaze.
I mean, the guy, he's famous for eating at Bob's Big Boy still, so.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, it's disgusting, right? He apparently took a lot of meetings there.
Wow, at a Bob's Big Boy? Yeah.
Billy cool. is having a dream, and then all of a sudden he's cut to Courtney Thorne-Smith talking backwards in the Red Lodge. The Black Lodge.
I listened to some interview recently where he was like being interviewed about potentially working on Return of the Jedi. And one of his things that he didn't like about going up to meet George Lucas in Northern California, he was like, it was Northern California and they have these salads. And then I'm eating a salad.
So I was, Willem Dafoe will have these really weird teeth. They're going to really unsettle you. Mr. Lynch, your dipping flipping fryers are here. Here you go. Thank you very much.
Yummy. Thank you, darling.
So anyway, Willem Dafoe in this motel in the middle of nowhere with Nick Cage in a snake jacket.
Great movie. So they wind, whatever, blah, blah, blah. She explains that Beth is her real name. Her name is Jo Beth, but in New York she went by Beth because her mom committed suicide and she was the only one that called her Jo, and she felt at that time that that's the only person she wanted to ever call her Jo, kind of
right.
a thing. It's
right,
nice,
right, right.
sort of sweet, yada yada.
If it's true.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's the thing, is you don't know. And Jake's like, awesome, let's make out. And they like hardcore make out, cue the Melrose Place make out music, and that's the end of the episode. But like, what is going on with this lady?
It's just a lot of secrets, man.
Mm.
She's wrapped up in a lot of shit,
well,
and it's only going to get heavier.
Well, I mean, if you are the Riverboat Strangler, I feel like you need more like complex women to strangle. You can't just like be getting blondes off the sidewalk every day.
I'm That's sick of murdering point. Bimbos.
He has to change up the MO to keep the police off the tracks.
Yeah. That's true. He's killing some dudes in there too.
He's trying to be up there with the greats like Zodiac. He doesn't want to be low time his whole life.
Look, I'm trying to mix it up a little bit. That's why I'm trying to push this horse off this ravine.
Listen, I'm the East Area Rapist, original Night Stalker, and I'm just hiding out for a couple years in Melrose Place until I'm eventually found out by Ancestry.com, all right?
Look, here's the deal. I'm gonna lay low from murdering people for a while and really dig my heels in on some quality arson.
I love the ancestry because that happened with the Golden State Killer or someone.
Yeah.
I just love that whole thing. It's just like, yeah, I've been killing people for years, but now I'm like really curious if I'm Irish or not. So I better send in my DNA.
Yeah. Yeah, you're uncovered by Trish from Ancestry.com, who took in your kit.
Oh, geez, looks like we got another serial killer here. Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's right. I left her in a fucking 40-barrel drum, and ooh, I guess I'm a little West Indian. Interesting. Oh, 2%, you say? Wow. Wait, I'm being arrested.
Did anybody watch that HBO doc?
I'm in the middle of it. It's still airing. It's good. It's good.
I thought it was just a 2-part thing.
No, it's a series. It's like 5 or 6 episodes. It's basically Patton Oswalt's now dead wife kind of going through her book that she wrote about the East Area Rapist who turned into the original Night Stalker, who is the Golden State Killer, all kind of rolled into one. It's really good. It's kind of mixing like true crime stuff with like really kind of gut-wrenching personal stuff because it's not a nice story for her.
Right, yeah. Michelle McNamara was
Michelle that. McNamara. I keep forgetting that name.
I'll Be Gone in the Dark. Is that what it's called?
That's the title is too much. It's like I'll Be Gone in the Dark sometimes around now, dark time, if there's a serial killer. I need like it's the story. You know, just like a 2-3 word title.
No, I think Is It Night Outside would be a good one.
Night Outside?
It has to sound like a Bright Eyes song.
Mm-hmm.
We need more commas.
Yeah, dude, once you get a comma in there, you got to get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here!
Oi!
Speaking of, Melrose Place is over with. So that was our episode of Melrose Place. As we always do, I'll go around asking for parting shots. And or are you excited to pick this back up when this series eventually, and that's a capital E eventually, picks back up on Patreon. I'll start with you, Chris Cabot.
Absolutely. This was a really crazy episode, I thought. A lot of things going on at the same time. All things I was interested in. So, more attention was given to stuff I don't care about than was to stuff I do care about. But everybody was active. I was entertained by everything. Things were strange enough that I was paying attention. and Kay Beacon, amazing emissary of the devil, as is Joe. And I look forward to seeing more of their dastardly deeds when we come back to this.
Eric Siska?
Yeah, I also want to see Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap coming up on future installments of Melrose Place. It's bittersweet, but at the same time, I wish it was a different episode to end this out on, because Kay Beacon and Joe is a bit much so far. I'm excited to unravel that mystery, but man, they are pushing the mystery, and it was a little annoying, but obviously I'm still here.
Andrew?
Oh yeah, I know we've had a lot of fun doing this show, and I know that a lot of folks have gotten a lot out of it during this quarantine time. Which the quarantine's not ending. We're just ending this as we get a little busier, like we've said. But there's still crazy stuff to come when we come back with this. Such as the next episode of Melrose Place, we will see has Allison running into some health problems.
Oh, no.
Jake may have a kid.
Oh no!
And then it sucks because we're just two episodes shy. We have episode 18, you guys, A Melrose Place Christmas, with Dr. Kimberly Shaw returning to the show, and you also get Matt's fucking dad in that episode. There's a lot to look forward to, and then just shortly after that, and also Rhonda meeting her future husband happens right around here. So there's a lot going on. I'm excited to continue when we bring this back on Patreon. Like I said, it was a show that I just watched when I was way too young to be watching it. I had no business watching it. This brought back a lot of fun memories, the brilliant times of the 90s, which, is definitely a rose-colored glasses situation. Don't think I don't know that. I hope folks enjoyed this and we enjoyed making it.
We sure did. Yeah. Party shots here. Yeah. I don't remember the Joe secret. I know it's probably not what we've already learned. There's probably more to it, but it better be fucking witness protection, because the way this woman is treating people, it cannot just be like, ooh, I had a bad marriage and it sucks and now I'm edgy. So get fucked, lady. by the way, I was looking up our good friend Kay Beacon. She is coming back in a couple episodes of this series. She's four or five appearances, but her name, as I said, is Sydney Walsh. She was on an episode of this show called, hold on, Sweet Justice. And she's credited, IMDb will always, like, in parentheses, like, as if you're credited as something else.
Oh, right.
But it's clearly whoever was doing the titles on Sweet Justice just did a typo, because she's as Sydney Walsh, Sydney. Because somebody's like, oh, fuck, sorry. It's like, oh, look, did you see my Sweet Justice episode? Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
This is ridiculous.
What, it's spelled like the city or something?
No, Sydney. So that's like Sydney, which is not anything.
Really weird. Yeah, that's not a name.
That's just
at
a
all.
Typo. It's like literally just a typo.
I just thought maybe that she was named after where she was conceived.
Oh. Also, we were three episodes shy of getting Jane's sister on the show.
Oh,
Sydney, of course.
Which we will get very soon. Yeah, when we come back. Yeah. I've had a lot of fun doing this show, and obviously I'm more of a 90210 guy. I've actually been really enjoying the Melrose Place part of this as well. So I'm glad we did both, and we will continue to do both. Sometime later on, kick this can down the road. We are not ending quarantine, nor should you, because we would like to have a world again, and that's the only way we're going to do it. But we're actually just getting a little busy, and we wanted to actually take some time off, because this has been a bit intensive for a bit. So, but that's not yet, because next week we're coming back with our final 90210 of the season. But we will say goodbye, put a circle of salt around Melrose Place so that no one can leave or enter it until we come back.
I, Malachi Throne, am officially shutting down the portal to hell for an indefinite amount of time.
So that's going to do it. I have been Steven Sadak.
Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Gabin.
Take it easy, remain indoors, and wear a fucking mask!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.